Phrases like, boys will be boys, time to man up and take it like a man, are pretty common. But what do we really mean by them? And is there any harm in what they represent? Especially in the time of Me Too, more attention has been paid to what governs male behavior and how much men and boys should be held accountable. But even so, there are a lot of assumptions about maleness and masculinity that persist. And our next guest says that the idea that men and boys cannot control certain urges do them a disservice and has serious cultural repercussions. Matthew Gutman is professor of anthropology at Brown University. He's been studying men and masculinities for nearly 30 years, especially in China, Mexico, and the United States. He's the author of the new book, Are Men Animals? How Modern Masculinity Sells Men Short. Matt, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, when we use the word masculinity, what are we actually referring to?
I think there's not just one definition. For some people, it's got to do with biology and genitals and Y chromosomes and things like that. For other people, they think of one person acts more masculine than another person, or somebody could say that at certain times they act more masculine than at another time. I think it varies. And most of us who study men and masculinities actually don't talk about masculinity in the singular, but in fact that there's a range. Not that there is nothing in common. There are broad commonalities, but there's also tremendous diversity in what it means to be a man, and that's why it's important not to get stuck in some biological definition.
Well, and sex and gender are not the same. How do those ideas intersect with ideas of masculinity or femininity, for that matter?
Well, the question, I think, for a lot of people is, to what extent is this inborn? I was born a man, I was born a woman, or I was born with ambiguous genitalia, as it's called, and therefore I must act, or I want to act, or I do act one way or another, and I think one way or another. And that's where I think we get into a lot of trouble. And usually sex or sexuality is often associated with more physical stuff, with more biological, and gender more social. But the fact is, they have a lot of connections with each other. They're not, you know, the world is not a neat sort of biology over here and culture over there. There's a lot of back and forth. And in profound ways, we're biocultural creatures.
You've looked at the concept and practice of masculinities in a variety of cultures. I'm curious whether you found more differences or more similarities in how cultures define what it is to be a man.
A lot more differences. And it's by region within a particular place. It's rural, urban. It's age groups. When my kids were born and I was in the delivery room, my father said, "This is crazy. What are you doing there? You should be out in some bar having a cigar." I mean, it's just stereotypical kind of thing from a very bygone era. So I think that there's differences along those lines. There's differences by class. In Mexico City, for instance, where I've looked at issues of fatherhood, it's fascinating that the higher you get economically, the less you might have to do with your children day to day. You hire people. So I once had a guy who was a banker criticize me, or just sort of call me out for wearing a Snuggly with one of my kids when they were very little. And he said, "That's what I pay somebody for, to carry my kids.
I'm going to stop you for a second, Matt. We're getting a lot of rustling from your mic, so maybe if you can hold it away from your shirt, that might help.
Okay.
Great. So you said that there are a lot more differences than similarities, and I'm guessing that for an anthropologist like yourself, that gives a lot of weight to the idea that culture has a lot to do with how we expect ourselves and others to act.
I think it does, but, I mean, take some recent events. Take the Brett Kavanaugh Supreme Court hearings. One of the things that you could hear, and I've collected quotes from the New York Times, from CNN, from Forbes magazine, where people explain an assault by a teenage boy against a teenage girl by reference to testosterone, as though this actually would explain Kavanaugh's behavior at that particular time in terms of what he was accused of. It had nothing to do with it. It had absolutely. Nobody took his testosterone levels. Nobody has ever argued that he had higher levels. Most young men do not assault young women or young men. And they have testosterone running through their veins too. But it's an easy way for some people to explain the world around them. And it's a way of saying, well, you know, teenage boys, they have this sudden hormone surge and they can't control it. The fact is, a lot of boys do. Most boys do. So that I think we get into trouble because we're saying biology is somehow ultimately responsible for bad behavior. And in this case, really egregious behavior of sexual assault.
We're talking with Matt Gutman right now. He's professor of anthropology at Brown University, and we are talking about his book, Are Men Animals? How Modern Masculinity Sells Men Short. We'll be back with Matt in just a moment.
The news that keeps you informed, the discussions you care about, music that helps you relax, and laughter that puts everything in perspective. Today, make your year-end gift to support the reasons you value, the vibrant and varied programming you enjoy every day on Wisconsin Public Radio. Go to WPR.org and click donate, and thanks.
We are talking with author Matthew Gutman about his book, Are Men Animals? How Modern Masculinity Sells Men Short. And we're just talking about testosterone. And, you know, there are so many cases where, as you said, Matt, we just say, oh, well, you know, there's so much testosterone in that room, no one could get a word in edgewise. But you say that that's really doing men and boys a disservice. Tell us more about that.
Well, it's not only doing men and boys a disservice, it's doing women a disservice. The fact is that testosterone is key for ovulation in women, but we don't hear too much about that. There have also been correlations found between levels of testosterone and generosity, but we also don't hear much about that. When Billy or Johnny cleans up his room and makes his bed, nobody walks around saying, well, you know, after all, boys will be boys. That's not the point. There's something that we've come to believe about an innate quality to boys, particularly with respect to aggression and sexuality, that I think actually gets us into more trouble because it does let men off the hook. It says almost, you know, they can't help themselves, the poor guys. So we have to stop them. But it's really not their fault. It's their biology's fault.
I'm fascinated that there are very different attributes of testosterone than the ones that we usually hear about. Why do you think it is that, for instance, you know, the assumption of being aggressive gets attributed to testosterone, but as you said, generosity doesn't?
I think it's part of a bigger issue. I think that in many ways, DNA, chromosomes, hormones, evolution, heredity, all these things have come to stand in some fashion for who we are. So you take 23andMe or Ancestry.com and you see ads on TV and people will say, well, I used to think I was such and such, but now I know I'm such and such. And therefore, I know why I behave the way I do because my ancestors, you know, 200 years ago, we're from a particular part of the world, as though all people in that part of the world behave a certain way.
We are talking right now with Matthew Gutman about his book, Are Men Animals? And he is a professor of anthropology at Brown University. He's been studying men and masculinity for nearly 30 years, especially in China, Mexico, and the United States. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in for Rob Ferret. Coming up, why homeownership has gone from being part of the dream to being a nightmare for some, and why that dream has never been within reach for some people. Right now, we're continuing our conversation with anthropologist Matthew Gutman about his new book, Are Men Animals? How Modern Masculinity Sells Men Short. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think that you make assumptions about boys and men that are rooted in biology? Do you think that boys will be boys is true? Why or why not? And if you think that there are certain ways that men and boys should act to be masculine, what are they? Do you think biology or culture is a bigger influence on how we behave? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Matt, I hadn't really thought about it much until I read it in your book, but we learn a lot from TV nature shows, and those shows tend to endow humans with very human characteristics. What does that mean for our understanding of the role of biology in animal behavior and ours?
Well, it's funny. I didn't put it together either until I was talking to a factory worker in Shanghai one day, and I said, what's the difference between men and women? Just something very vague like that. And he said, when men see a pretty woman, their hormones go up. And I asked him what he meant by that, and he said, I don't know, but their hormones go up. And I asked him where he learned it, and he said he watches Discovery Channel, which is now available in Shanghai. Hmm. And the fact is that hundreds of millions, literally hundreds of millions of households worldwide get these. And I know growing up, if I saw a show and they said something about the male zebra this and the male orangutan that, I paid more attention because I figured they had something to do with me. And I think we slip really easily into making an association between what other species do or don't do and what humans do. Not only are we doing a disservice to the other species, we're really missing the most important fact, which is there's a range of variation in every animal species, but the range among humans is infinite, literally infinite, and it's much larger than in any other. And that is an important. We can actually change our biologies through our culture.
Well, and I think that's a really interesting point because, as you said, there's a lot more predictability in how animals are going to act or react in certain situations. And I think, as you kind of brought that realization to me, that we learn a lot, or we think we learn a lot, at least from those shows that often do give those human characteristics to animals, we might, without realizing it, be making an assumption like, well, if we can count on a male or female zebra or lion or meerkat to do X, then there's probably a good chance that we are going to do that too, unless we suppress it.
Right. I mean, you know, among your listeners, I would ask the same question I ask my students at the university. And that is, when you turned 18, what organization did you sign up with the federal government, other than the election commission, which is done by states or towns? Young men sign up for a possible draft. Young women do not. How many people actually questioned that at the time when they turned 18? Somehow we associate men, including young men, with aggression, with warlike abilities, potential, that women don't have. This is not a question of upper body strength anymore and carrying shields and spears. This is an ingrained assumption about the way men are versus the way women are. You could say the same thing about contraception. How come there have been no new, modern, effective forms of birth control for men? There just haven't. And I think this has to do with ingrained ideas. Well, women get pregnant. It's their responsibility. I think this is a cultural problem, not a biological one.
We're talking with anthropologist Matthew Gutman about his new book, Are Men Animals? How Modern Masculinity Sells Men Short. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-642-1234. And let's go to the phones. And John in Cross Plains is up. Hi, John.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I completely agree with what the speaker's last point was, that there's a significant cultural dimension to this. And I was going to give an example from my own background to support that. I'm a bit of an older man, and certainly, you know, was exposed to the aggressive mythology about men. But in my family, my dad was taught me right from as a young child that I should be very respectful of women. And he practiced that in the way he treated my mother. And I always grew up with that very strong value in my behavior, which affected how I treated girls and women for the rest of my life. And I was probably one of the least aggressive males as a result of that. So I really think there is a very powerful cultural and dimension, an educational dimension. And you can see that actually when you look at the behavior of an educator, of parents of young boys that are aggressive males, their boys tend to be aggressive. Thank you.
And John, if you're still there, did you feel like you got pressure from those outside of your family to be kind of tougher or more aggressive?
Well, it was a nonverbal pressure that there was these examples of these more aggressive boys that you know, played out in terms of also their aggressiveness in other ways. And it just didn't fit with the way I was being raised in terms of how I should behave as a male. So it spilled over into my relationship with other males in that I wasn't aggressive with them either, but primarily because some of the younger boys were more aggressive with girls. You know, they had boyfriends, they had girlfriends before, you know, I did, because I wasn't thinking about that.
Well, John, thank you so much for that. And Matt, really interesting example there of how different types of behavior can be modeled for a new generation.
Yeah, I think this is right. I think both your points were important. I think one, literally how parents treat you, but also how the broader society treats you, can have a tremendous influence. You know, let's go back 100 years in history, anywhere in the world. If you said, why are there no women leaders, political leaders, other than a few queens, virtually everybody would have said, well, it's just men are better leaders, better political leaders. It's just, that's just the way it is. If women were so good after all these millennia, don't you think there'd be some women leaders? And they're not. So it must be biological. I think the point is people can change. And in the space of 100 years, it's nowhere near 50-50, including in the U.S. Senate or House of Representatives. But it's certainly moving in a direction that 100 years ago people would have said impossible. And that has to do with political movements and pressure like that. It also has to do with parents changing their mind in terms of how they raise their kids. It has to do with all sorts of social and political currents that are going on. And I think one of the points I'd like to emphasize here is it's not just people who don't know what they're talking about or are right wing or something like that who fall into the trap of thinking testosterone or Y chromosomes or whatever explain more than they do. The fact is that I think many of us fall into the idea that boys somehow are different. And if I have a boy and a girl, if I raise a boy and a girl, I just know that they're innately different, when in fact the new studies are coming along and showing not just in infants, but newborns are treated dramatically differently from birth by mothers as well as fathers.
There are also a lot of assumptions about males and sexual drive or needs, as they're often called. What are some of those beliefs that we have kind of absorbed as a culture?
Well, I'll give you one example. The year is 1996, and I got into an argument with somebody who said that women were not visually stimulated sexually, therefore they did not like pornography. Men liked pornography because they were visually stimulated. This is 1996. This is before the internet. lo and behold, today, according to every survey done, there are millions of women who do like pornography and watch it regularly. Not all women, just like not all men. But the fact is that what the and there were scientific studies proving this guy's point in 1996. The thing is that it had little to do with visual stimulation on the part of men or women, and much more to do with stigma attached to porn in that case. And once you can watch it in the privacy of your own home, behavior can change dramatically. So again, there are certain assumptions that just make sense because we look around us. You know, if I were on your show talking about Baroque architecture, most people would just be sitting there listening. I'm talking about gender, masculinity, men. Everybody in your audience has experience and opinions about these things, which makes it so lively.
We're talking with anthropologist Matthew Gutman about his new book, Are Men Animals? How Modern Masculinity Sells Men Short. And as Matt said, we'd love to hear from you. What lessons have you been taught, whether implicitly or explicitly, about men and masculinity? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Stairs Poisson. We're continuing our conversation now with Matthew Gutman. He's professor of anthropology at Brown University and the author of the new book, Are Men Animals? How Modern Masculinity Sells Men Short. And I want to go back to that issue of sexual drive and desire. And it seems like while rape is not socially acceptable in most societies, there is often an emphasis, Matt, on women keeping themselves safe instead of men controlling their urges. And there's still a lot of victim shaming and blaming for what she may have been wearing or where she was and at what time. What would need to happen to change that dialogue?
Well, it's really important to know that in all the studies of rape internationally, globally, you find the highest incidence of rape in societies that have been found to be least equal in terms of political power for women in those societies. Where there's more approaching equality in various kinds of opportunities for work, participation in government and whatnot, you find lower rape rates. So I think it's directly tied to women's position in society in a particular place. And I think that men are treated with impunity, in particularly in the United States and some other countries, when, again, you can have the Kavanaugh hearings and the issue of rape is tossed off as just childish pranks. That reflects a deep problem, it seems to me, in our understanding and what we expect of men and their sexuality, that if they're just sort of acting on urges they can't control, that's quite different than they choose that particular behavior and they should be held accountable for that particular behavior.
Let's go to the phones, and Carl is up. Hi, Carl.
Oh, hello. Hello. I thought an interesting reference point would, and kind of an extreme on with animals, is the elephant, male elephants that are domesticated or kept for work, then are known to go into, I think it's called musk, where they go into a phase of wanting to breed, and they different ways of managing them by starving them and then heavy chains, and but they're prone to going crazy and going on rampages, and so that's a burden with the elephant. And then I wonder if the author has reviewed the history of eunuchs. It seems like there could be in the cultural some real advantages, greater longevity and some other things. And then we're in the dance of the hormones. Can you name all the hormones? Serotonin and dopamine and testosterone.
All right. Great points there, Carl. And I'll ask Matt to respond in just a moment. But I think Connie in Portage has something that kind of goes along with that first part. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I wondered why my husband likes to watch shows on television where animals are killing animals, like lions are killing zebras and all this, and I cannot stand it. And I wondered if that's a male thing. I don't know any women that enjoy watching that.
All right. Well, thank you. So two perspectives on those animal interactions that we see on those nature programs. What's going on there, Matt?
Well, I can't speak to anybody's husband in particular. To me, you know, I think men are raised to be more aggressive. That's why you have young men signing up for the draft. Now, whether that's something innate or not, I think is an entirely different question. I would argue that it's not. But we train men from a very early age, boys, to act out their aggression, and that they may be mischievous, but there's something really quite good about them doing this, because they're just getting out their inner spirit in some fashion. So I don't know studies that, you know, whether men watch more violence than women or not. But again, I don't think that women, there's anything inherent about women not wanting to watch violence any more than there's something inherent about men having to do that. I know plenty of men who would not want to, who would not enjoy that. In terms of eunuchs, I haven't looked at eunuchs in particular, but I have looked a little at the solution of castration for men who rape, which is an option that has been used in the United States and other countries, including in recent years. And I think what this is ultimately, what this has to do with, is the thinking that these men have been forced almost to rape because of some part of their anatomy. And if we take out that anatomy, then that won't happen anymore. Instead of looking at the fact that 9 out of 10 murderers in the United States, killers, are men. But the vast majority of men are not murderers. They never kill. They never hurt. They never assault. So why do the ones who do it think they can get away with it, or that they're justified in some fashion? Where does that impunity come from?
Let's go back to the phones, and Janine in Madison is up. Hi, Janine.
Hi. I'm really enjoying the conversations that are happening here.
Thanks.
First thing. Second thing is, I guess I've been reflecting a lot on my own socialization as a woman and thinking about the relationships and friendships that I have with men in my life. And I feel that part of my socialization was to, or my gendered socialization rather, is to care for the relationships in my life. And I think there's been sort of a lower bar emotionally that I've come to expect from the men in my life, because I don't think that they've been socialized to do the emotional work that many women have to do to maintain relationships, which, you know, sometimes requires, like, you know, emotional subversion or subverting your feelings to sort of, you know, foster harmony in the collective. What I'm trying to speak to is just the burden, the emotional burden that's placed on women because of these different social expectations are placed on these sort of two binary genders.
Mm-hmm. Janine, thanks for that. And I guess, Matt, I would go back to the subtitle of your book, How Modern Masculinity Sells Men Short. What are men missing out on that they are not expected or really taught to have those emotional caring roles?
Well, I used the example of my father earlier and being in the delivery room. Another example is to think back when most men in the world were farmers. And there are countries today where most men are farmers. They don't live in cities. In these places, virtually in every one of these places, men take their small children, particularly their boys, but also their girls, out to the fields with them. And they actually participate far more on a daily basis in childcare of various kinds, and they have for millennia. And we forget about that. And what happened when men moved to the cities and they started driving taxis and working in factories and doing all sorts of things, and they couldn't take care of children anymore because it wasn't possible to bring your kid along in the taxi or on the assembly line or anything like that. And so, in a curious way, just urbanization and modernity have themselves inflicted some harm on men's nurturing side, I would argue, and made it much more difficult economically for families to sustain men participating. But I think often we just simply say it's bad attitudes on the part of men. And there's plenty of bad attitudes about this stuff. I'm not denying that a bit. But there are also some societal structural problems that contribute in a big way. And I think we have to recognize institutional, structural, societal elements at reinforcing certain kinds of masculinity and not others.
And as we wrap up, Matt, if you could wave a magic wand and change how we view males and how we define masculinities, what would that look like?
We don't associate aggression or hypersexuality with people who are left-handed or people who are 6 foot versus 5 foot six. It's just that stupid to talk about left-handers, you know, are this or that, although I have heard they're always smarter.
They do tend to be elected president more.
There you go. but we don't associate left-handers with aggression or sexuality. Why would we do that with men and women? Why are we looking around for new forms of masculinity instead of saying some people are aggressive and in what circumstances and is it ever justified or is it not? And women, I think, are just as capable of some of these things, but culturally speaking, it hasn't happened. There have been a lot of changes and there's a lot of confusion and turmoil and renegotiation today around gender and sexuality. And I think that's wonderful. But at the same time, it's a dangerous period. When Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood came out in 1985, it seemed to me anyway, a lot more like science fiction. Mm. It's scarier now. And I think those of us who feel strongly about some of these things, we have to support Me Too. We have to support some of the social movements that are pushing in a particular direction.
And we'll leave it there, Matt. Thanks so much for joining us. Matt Gutman is professor of anthropology at Brown University. He joined us to talk about his new book, Are Men Animals? How Modern Masculinity Sells Men Short.